corrupted nerds ensconced in the twilight of their bedroom, whether it be in Paris, Singapore, Lagos, Bucharest, or indeed even Sydney.
And from near Sydney, welcome to Corrupted Nerds Conversations, Episode 6. Today, the joy of DDoS, distributed denial of service attacks. They're cheap and easy to do, they're getting more powerful, and as Australia and everyone else rolls out faster broadband, they're only going to get worse.
That increases the amount of bandwidth that's available to the home, but that also increases the amount of bandwidth that a bunch of computers at the home can throw at a target site.
We are getting better at protecting online applications, but the irony is the attackers can leverage that complexity so their attacks have more impact.
The more secure that your site is, because you're checking for all these things for confidentiality and integrity, the harder it is to actually defend that site against an application DDoS attack.
Corrupted Nerds, a podcast about information, power, security, and all the cybers in a global internet revolution that's changing everything. Well, hello, I'm Stilgherrian. Our guest today, apart from our friends the cicadas, and the locals here in the Blue Mountains tell me they're active earlier this year, and they're louder than they can remember. We really have screwed up this planet, haven't we? Anyway, our non-cicada guest is Michael Smith, head of the Computer Security Incident Response Team at Akamai Technologies. Now, Akamai is a content distribution network, a CDN. If your website has a lot of traffic, and I mean a lot, then Akamai is one of the companies that can help you and the internet by distributing that content across the planet so it's closer to your audience. In fact, Akamai handles around 30% of all web traffic. So they get to see traffic patterns on the internet on a grand scale, and they have to deal with some of the biggest DDoS attacks around, or at least the biggest ones that are publicly acknowledged. Two new bits of vocabulary for you today. Content management systems, CMS, are the systems used to manage the content on a website. Why did I bother explaining this? I mean things like WordPress or Joomla or Blogger, as well as, you know, many custom implementations. And a Google dork is when you use Google to search for vulnerable websites, say a WordPress site that hasn't been updated. Well, you're a dork if you don't keep your software up to date, and with a Google dork, you're Googling for those dorks, or so goes the logic. And also, one bit of housekeeping, Corrupted Nerds is now becoming available on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/corruptednerds. The episodes will all be appearing there over the coming days. Well, this interview with Michael Smith was recorded via Skype to Sydney, Australia on the 4th of September 2013. Enjoy. Michael Smith, I guess we'd better start by talking about denial of service attacks because, you know, A, Akamai gets hit with them for some funny reason, and B, we keep hearing how they're on the rise. Now, last time we spoke about these with someone from Akamai last year, we were seeing attacks on the scale of, you know, a good couple hundred gigabits a second are we talking about, and I guess they're still climbing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely still climbing. So there are a couple things that have led to this situation. So one is the rise of broadband. So such as the broadband plan that they have for Australia, that increases the amount of bandwidth that's available to the home, but that also increases the amount of bandwidth that a bunch of computers at the home can throw at a target site.
So obviously we're never going to see that reduced because everybody's going to keep ramping up the available bandwidth.
Exactly. So places like South Korea, we have botnet problems in South Korea a lot. The Korean ISPs are pretty good now at cleaning up those problems, but we still have those. Okay. Another thing is just malware proliferation. In that, if you are able to get a footprint on a desktop, and as AV loses its efficacy, you're able to get a footprint on the desktop, and that combined with the bandwidth to the desktop means that you can throw more volume in as an attacker. Okay.
And again, that's something that we're not really going to be able to do much about because the bad guys seem to be getting better and better at building the malware, and that therefore means it's cheaper
to deploy an attack. I mean, I remember even a couple of years ago, the going price for a 10,000 botnet was, you know, $10 US for a period of time. It was nothing. It was pocket money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's still that way, which is why the only thing really that's saving us, at least from the desktop bots, is that once you start using those bots and attacking, eventually they'll get cleaned up. So it's more cost advantageous for a bot herder to do things like steal personal information off those desktops, use those desktops as a platform to attack other things. They're not necessarily using them for a lot of DDoS simply because you burn a certain amount of your bot every time you use it.
Well, that points to an interesting little economic problem they have there, which I think anyone who does a follow the crime by following the money would have a fascinating PhD thesis in that.
Oh yeah, definitely. So it's one of those where what you see is the bot herders, they'll build their bot, they'll work at it, they'll start with things that actually earn the money, and over time they'll switch to doing DDoSes. So, I mean, your payoff for DDoS, a lot of times we'll see this in things like e-commerce sites, insurance. They will earn income by doing a protection racket, right? So they get in your chat with a sales support specialist line. That, you know, the little IRC widgets that people have on their sites, they'll get in there and they'll say, "I am talk to your manager," right? And then you get a manager online. They're like, "I am DDoS your site. Pay me, I don't know, $4,000 to $60,000, somewhere in there." It's usually towards the lower end of that. So it's usually like $6,000 to $10,000. And so they get in and it's just a protection racket, right? So back in the old days, the mob would show up and they'd say, "Hey, you got a really nice store. It'd be a shame if something were to happen to it tomorrow. And if you don't pay them the insurance fee, then they break out your Windows." Right. Same thing. It's just moved online.
Yeah, we keep hearing that. There's only so many crimes in the world. There's only so many stories in the world, and they're all moving online. Therefore, on the defensive side, how are we getting better at defending at these better attack against these better attacks?
So we're getting better. We're also getting badder. Right.
Okay.
So We're getting pretty good because just like the bandwidth is increasing on the mobile or the broadband subscriber side, we're also increasing bandwidth on the server side. Mm. Right? So we're building out more capacity there. It's not proportional. It's not the same rate as we're building out to the desktop, but we're building it out. Okay? Then we have people that have services. Usually there are three different technologies that you can use there. One is an on-premises appliance. You drop it in. It's basically an IDS that understands DDoS traffic patterns.
IDS being intrusion detection system.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm. Exactly. Okay. Another setup is a traffic scrubber, and the ISPs have them. There's some that are standalone, that are ISP agnostic. They have basically the same kit, only it's deployed with a lot more capacity. So ultimately, you say, "Hey, wait a minute! My network is flooded coming, or the pipes are flooded coming into my data center, and so I need to flip someplace where I have larger capacity to absorb that." Okay, and then the last is something like a content delivery network, which really is just a web proxy inside the user's ISP or close to the user's ISP, and it localizes that particular attack traffic, and it actually makes your site faster too. So it has other benefits besides just protecting the site. Okay.
Right. So really, if I can summarize the broad strategies there, the first two are really kind of somehow detect which traffic is the bad traffic and just deflect it somewhere else or ignore it or realize that's what's going on. And the final one, the content distribution network, is that process of distributing all of your load around the planet. So even if one spot gets hit, it's no big deal. It's just a proportion of your customers are going to have problems.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they're all things that scale. And again, I remember last time, even though we heard that the scale of these attacks are in the order of hundreds of gigabits per second bearing down upon a site, that compared to the total capacity of an organization like Akamai or some other hosting provider, it actually isn't a big percentage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, how you have much bigger pipes than all of that.
Yes. So what you'll see is that instead of DDoS being a kind of a low table stakes game, the defenders are bigger, the attackers are bigger. When things fail, they fail a lot instead of just small failures.
Okay? Right.
Right. And then there are two other things that, we've seen over the past, say, year or so. One is all the attacks against banks in the States, where the platform used to launch those attacks is actually compromised content management systems. So it's usually Joomla, WordPress, cPanel. You'll find those technologies there where the attackers can use Google. They Google dork to find these vulnerable systems. Then they'll either use the default admin password, right? So how much unmanaged WordPress is out there? It's everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Right? I still have a few clients where, again, it's the classic one. Their website was set up some years ago, and you've got to continually remind them that it has to be maintained, or at least someone keep an eye on it.
It's not even that they don't maintain it. It's that they might not even know that it's there, right? So sometimes you go to like a virtual private server company, you sign up for an email service. You think you're getting an SMTP service, and then on top of it, they throw in a WordPress blog for free.
Right.
You don't even know that you have a WordPress blog, and that thing's just been sitting out there for 2 years.
And to put some numbers on that, at the recent WordPress Developers Conference, they claim that 19% of all websites on the planet run on WordPress.
So that sounds about right.
Yeah, which means you've got this vast quantity. I mean, we're talking there about literally tens, if not hundreds of millions of websites, a good proportion of which are going to be unmaintained for the reasons we've discussed. Gee, that's a lot of firepower you can bring to bear.
Yeah, and so that's what we've seen against the U.S. banks, is where the attackers, they've compromised these content management systems. They put up a file. They call the file that actually launches the attack. But the more important thing for me is that these guys have 100 megabits per second per virtual private server or per cloud server, where normally if you do this with desktops, you've got, you know, 1 to 2 megabits per second, maybe.
Yeah, the uplink speed of your typical DSL connection, yeah.
Exactly. So they're able to bring a lot more attack traffic to bear. And what's more important for me is that because they use a smaller number of attacking nodes, they can actually retarget. Okay, and they can change the pattern of the attack faster and basically outmaneuver outmaneuver you on the battlefield. But you know what I mean, right? They can change what it is that they're doing and their attack techniques faster than you can change how you're blocking it.
So what do you do in the face of that, apart from shout at the wall?
So well, there are a couple techniques that people are doing. One is just information sharing. Right. So being able to say, hey, I saw this attack. These were the source IP addresses. These were the patterns of the attack. You know, as much information as you can get about the particular attack techniques, then share with other organizations. Right. And in this case, this specific case, what you notice is that they use the same techniques to attack multiple organizations. So it really just sucks. That's a technical term. If you're the first guy that gets attacked or the second guy, but if you're the 10th guy that gets attacked, you can actually learn from these other people. So one of the things that we have in, and it's exclusive to the US, is the Financial Services Information Sharing and Analysis Center. There, it's sponsored by the US government, but it's an organization that brings together all the financial services, and they have one for water supply. They have one for power grid. They have one for military industrial base. But it gets these constituency together, and they share information on attacker tactics, techniques, and procedures, indicators of compromise. They're basically saying, yes, I saw this. This is what it looked like. Now everybody as a community gets smarter.
Now, these information sharing organizations are fantastic for the defensive side because, you know, you're sharing information like this. How do you deal with the problem that in some cases, if not many cases, the compromised machines are going to be outside your jurisdiction? Certainly, there is a very good chance that the coordinating command and control machines are outside your jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. How do you then deal with that?
Well, we have precedents for that. So we have an abuse process. You can complain to the network operators. We have services that are known as takedown services. They're built primarily around phishing attacks where you say, hey, here's a phishing attack. I know it's a phishing attack. Get it to the takedown service. And literally all these people do all day long is call the network operator, get a hold of the hosting provider, and get that particular piece of content taken down. But it's not fast, right? This is a process that is done with people. And you run into this kind of arms race with the bot herders in that you're trying to clean stuff up, and it's really how fast can you clean stuff up versus how fast can they infect it.
Now, we have noticed certain kinds of attacks where the amount of firepower, if you like, that can be brought to bear is massively amplified. Is this thing called a DNS amplification attack mm-hmm. that we've been hearing about recently?
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible to explain how that works without our minds turning to jelly?
Yes, but I have to step through it.
Okay.
So think about flooding somebody's mailbox, right? Not their email mailbox, but their regular mailbox. So what I do is I go and I fill out a I want more information card. And I fill out a whole bunch of these. But I use your address. And I give it out to a whole bunch of other organizations, and suddenly you're flooded with catalogs, right? I can order a dozen pizzas and have them shipped to your house, and suddenly you're stuck there with a whole bunch of mad pizza delivery guys that want their bill paid, right? That's kind of how DNS amplification works, where I send a small request to a DNS server that's misconfigured. But it's the default behavior, so there's lots of misconfigured things out there. I send a small request. I pretend that I'm you or your name server or even your web server because I'm just trying to flood the network. And the response from those servers are significantly large. So I send, say, a 5-byte request, and that's fairly large for a DNS encrypt. I send a 5-byte request to the name server. It replies back with 6K of response. Only you receive it instead of me.
And all the attacker has sent out is those 5 bytes. So they can exactly. Obviously do a lot of that. Okay, well, look, we'll, as always, have links on the podcast website to the things we talk about. And I'm sure someone's done a lovely explanation of that with a diagram. And also, I'm sure, an explanation for the people managing name servers. You said it's a misconfiguration, but it's also the default. So this sounds like one of those things where we all decided many years ago when we built the internet that this would be a good way of doing things, except
exactly.
Now the internet is a much more hostile place. And
well, it's not just that the internet's a more hostile place. It's that there are more name servers on the internet, and broadband speeds are bigger, and the speed right. into the data center is bigger. So things that were a non-consequential, I don't know, design choice or a configuration choice, say 10 years ago, 15 years ago, are just the assumptions there no longer apply, okay? And there are two things that people can do. One is stop recursive resolvers. So don't allow your name server to answer any requests for the rest of the world, right? You can lock down the type of requests you answer and the type of domains that you resolve for. The other piece is what we call BCP38, and that's best common practices. It's a BCP. And
okay.
BCP38 says only allow traffic to leave your network, right? So whether you're an ISP, carrier, anything like that, only allow traffic to leave your network that originates inside of your network or the networks that you support. So what that does is it keeps that original problem, which is I am pretending to be you. And they say, you know what, yeah, that's cool, but Mike lives in Boston and still lives in someplace, in the mountains.
In the mountains.
He lives in the mountains. So why is he actually ordering catalogs?
Okay, so we're talking about building a lot more smarts into the routing of traffic instead of just saying, hey, here's an IP address, I'd better send it on.
Yeah, it's not a lot of smarts. But it's just enough to stop some of the egregious abuses.
Well, finally, Michael, I've been asking everyone in recent weeks about just some of the things in the news, and you may or may not have an opinion on this, but the Syrian Electronic Army. Now, obviously, they've blipped up to be an incredibly high-profile organization in recent months. As I said in a recent episode, though, perhaps that's because their targets were media organizations, so it's a bit hard to – it's a bit difficult to hide the fact that they've been hit.
It's a good tactic for them.
Yeah.
Simply because when you attack one media organization – all the others are like, oh, look, look what happened to these guys. So there's a little bit of understanding what the attackers are trying to do. Their impact isn't that big. Okay, so they've stuck with defacements. They've stuck with service outages. They could do a lot more worse, but I can allude to that. But it sounds like a little bit of FUD. And it's got a slice of FUD there, so I apologize. But yeah, they could do more dangerous things, like a watering hole attack. Where instead of getting a defaced site, you say, oh, here's some lovely little nasties to download while you visit the site.
Okay? Well, exactly. I think of the kind of traffic a site like the New York Times has every day. Mm-hmm. And even if you infect 1% of the traffic to that site, you're dealing with a big problem.
Yes.
So,
but these folks, their actual goal is to generate press. Okay? And once you understand that, things start to get different, right? If you understand that your adversary really just wants press, the method of attack and the actual target are completely immaterial. Now you can start to counter them with your own PR war, right? At some point, people have to say, yeah, okay, you defaced our site, but what was the real impact that you caused? Okay, simply because, yes, people spend a lot of time, you know, you spend, even my team with Syrian Electronic Army, we've spent a couple of weeks and we've spent probably, 10 to 40 man hours trying to deal with some of their impact. But really, from a dollar cost, it's fairly small. There's a little bit of brand damage for people that they deface or for people that they take offline. But overall, in all things considered, that impact isn't that great.
It's interesting you talked about brand damage there, because I first started thinking, for a major media site, for each hour that you're down is up in the tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars of advertising revenue. But then long-term brand damage, I still would go to the New York Times for my news today, even if they happened to be offline yesterday, because the impact is nothing to do with their news gathering ability their trust in their news.
Exactly. And news organizations have a brand, right? And pretty much all things considered, that's what they have, is a brand, right? So you've got some reporters, some editors, you have content, you have a particular viewpoint. But all that leads up into, here's the brand of that organization. Right. Now, things might change if you start getting malware when you go to the site. I'd be less inclined to go to the site if I got that. That does impact them. But we haven't seen a lot of like customer churn, user churn, simply because of outages or defacements.
And for that matter, even when organizations say, oh, I will never use that gaming company again because they were compromised, the reality is they don't actually churn away many customers because people still want to play the games.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So we all talk about how we're never going to do business with these insecure companies, but the reality is very different.
Yeah, and you will have some people that won't come around or won't go there, but your choices are fairly limited.
Exactly.
Right? So look at say banking, where if your bank's website is down, what does that mean to you as a customer of the bank?
Not a lot. I have to wait. Yeah.
You can't apply for a loan. You can't pay bills. You can check your balance if you get out of your mom's basement, walk down the street, and go to check it at an ATM. There are other ways to do what it is that you would normally do. It costs the bank money in resources, cost of mitigation providers. But the biggest cost for the bank is that they have a metric, which is how much money does it cost to actually have a customer as a customer and to provide them a certain level of service, right? And a website is a cheaper way for them to do that. So when the bank's website is offline, they have to use more expensive means to service their customers, i.e. branch offices where you have real estate, you have a building, you have electricity going to the building, you have people that are there. Those are expensive compared to a website where you hook some applications into a database.
It all just comes back to playing the numbers, doesn't it? So as a final point, you did indicate that you think, you know, it's the arms race. The bad guys are getting better. The good guys are getting better at defending. How do you feel that balance is going to play out, say, over the next 12 months? Are we in for a tough time, or are we starting to get on top of things?
Things will change, right? So there are a couple, standards that are there, or standard things that happen. It's a better way to say it, in that the internet will always be as secure as it needs to be to get things done, and probably no more, right? There's just not an incentive to do more than that. The attackers will always go for the easiest way or less risky way to achieve their results. Things will change, right? So one of the things that I'm tracking a lot right now is where DDoS, which people normally think of that as a network problem, right? In that you flood the pipe going into the data center. Well, that's not really how DDoS happens today, right? For us, simply because we only deal in web, for us, it is an application problem,
right?
Is the application available to the users? That's really what the users want. They want the site. They don't really care about the infrastructure that gets it there. For our customers, it's a business problem in that, you know, how do we service our users? Are we making money this way? Are we losing money because the site's down? Okay. The attackers themselves are moving from, like layer three, layer four network flooding type attacks, and they're moving up higher into the stack to do things inside of the application. So some of these attacks look like SQL injection, right? Where you're trying to send commands through the form field or through the query string to a database to make the database churn and basically blow up because it uses a lot of RAM and it uses a lot of CPU.
And again, that's amplifying the effect of your attack because that's really a bigger hit at the recipient's end.
Yeah, exactly. So I say that's a modifier. But then again, it still has a volume component. So if I blow up the network, I blow up the network. If I blow up the database, I blow up the database. So I don't care because I've achieved my technical targeting goal. Okay. Mm. Now, the problem is that in order to do input validation there, right? So normally you'd say, I'm checking this particular form field, seeing if that is something that looks like SQL injection, and if not, I'll block it. But as you add more input validation, fraud detection, identity and access management, all these things that you put into the application or into the database or into something immediately upstream from them, as you add more logic there, it increases the asymmetric nature of the traffic. So what I mean is that as an attacker, you send one small request. You send a 600-byte HTTP request that generates an enormous amount of CPU and RAM usage, disk I/O, logging on the application, the database, all that stuff. So in a sense, the more secure that your site is because you're checking for all these things for confidentiality and integrity, the harder it is to actually defend that site against an application DDoS attack. Right? And that's this big, conundrum or the big paradox there, which is how do you get websites that scale, but actually scale linearly along the security side?
That's an interesting conundrum, as you say, to end on. And I think we will have to end it there because we're out of time. Yeah. Michael Smith, thanks very much for your time today.
Right. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Michael Smith, head of the Computer Security Incident Response Team at Akamai Technologies.
Episode notes and links to all the things we mentioned are at CorruptedNerds.com. And that's it for Episode 6 of Corrupted Nerds Conversations. Don't forget to subscribe either at iTunes or at SoundCloud or by RSS in your choice of software. Please leave a comment, tell your friends, and watch out for news of how you can support Corrupted Nerds that will be appearing within hours. There will even be a special podcast announcement. I'm Still Gerrion. See you next time.